What an easy win for the Rockets last night. James Harden had 25 first-half points. He finished with 36 and a 127-101 win over the Sacramento Kings. The Rockets are now a season-best 10 games over 500 at 32-22, and they just wrapped up a four-game road trip, three winning West teams along the way in six nights, 3-1, and they did not have Clint Capella the whole way.
Mm-hmm.
Eric Gordon missed a game. Chris Paul missed a game. Very impressive.
And they've won about two-thirds of their games since Clint Capella has been out. That's been one of the most impressive things, I think. Obviously, you get the return
of problematic player.
Chris Paul. He was.
You can't have these Swiss guys on your team.
He's a cancer,
playing their Euro soft basketball.
Capella demanding the lobs was hurting this team. What happens when Capella comes back? How are they going to handle that blow to the... obviously, Paul and I are joking.
Yes.
Did you go over the trade yet?
Well, that's the other part of it.
I interrupted you in the middle of your flow, sir. I apologize.
No, you're good. The Houston Rockets will get Iman Shumpert in a three-way trade with the Cleveland Cavaliers and Sacramento Kings. Goodbye, Brandon Knight, Sweet Prince. Marquez Chris, we appreciated the banner that you had on the side of Toyota Center, but you are no more. Also, a 2019 lottery-protected first-round pick will go to Cleveland. As far as the Cavaliers side of things, they sent guard Alec Burks, who was rumored to be potentially a Rockets trade target, to Sacramento. Guards Nick Stauskas and Wade Baldwin also join the Houston Rockets as a part of this deal. They were acquired in a deal with Portland on Sunday that sent Rodney Hood to the Trailblazers. These three-way team trades confused the hell out of me.
Well, here's the bottom line. The Rockets got Iman Shumpert, Nick Stauskas, and they gave up a first-round pick.
Thanks, Mikey.
I'm unimpressed. I'm unimpressed by these moves.
Oh, stop it.
I'm just...
You cleared some space, bro.
Well, here's the thing.
This luxury tax gets expensive. You spent $2 billion on that team. You gotta get some of that space back.
The money's a real consideration. There's no doubt. I'm just looking at it this way. The one real piece the Rockets had was their first-round pick this year, which they traded, and they have no picks yet again.
Yeah.
And the guys they got, I don't think are really moving the needle as far as the playoffs go. Iman Shumpert can play defense. I don't really trust him offensively. I don't know if he's going to be a guy you can play in a playoff series. Maybe he will be that guy.
Oh, I didn't realize defense wasn't an issue on this team. I didn't realize that his added defense won't be a big deal.
Well, I could be wrong. I'm just unimpressed.
I know you're unimpressed, but this is like how many various years of Rockets do we have to go through over the last 10 years where they make some humdrum moves at the deadline and it actually ends up mattering. Like the team chemistry and the composition of the team changes enough that it ends up mattering come playoff time.
Well, the difference is usually I like those moves. This move, I'm like, eh.
Yeah, I trust. Eh. Listen, Mike. I don't know about you. I trust Daryl Morey. I'm not like.
I trust
him
too.
I'm not you. Listen, you know why, Mike? Because I understand math. You don't understand math. I'm gonna go to the old refuge of any Rockets fan, which is if you don't like a move, you just respond by saying, "Well, you don't know
don't
math.
Get it.
I get it. I understand the math of it all."
And Daryl, I trust. Yeah. Michael. And Daryl,
hey guys,
trust.
You know, Iman, he plays defense. He's a 3-and-D kind of guy, and we think in the playoffs he can really provide some nice minutes. Our defense needs a little bit of upgrade, and we like Iman, and we always kind of like Nick. He's got a great range. We know we like to shoot threes, and Nick's a great 3-point shooter.
I was surprised by how many people just immediately went to basically fire Tillman Fertitta on this one because it's evidence of him just being a cheap owner, doesn't want to pay the luxury tax. I'm sorry, I didn't know you're that attached to Marcus Chris, and this is such a horrible move because you're getting rid of the backbone of the team somehow.
I like this move. You got a guy who's another player that's played in big time spots. Right?
Well, you sold me. You got a guy.
I mean, look, Marcus Chris, Brandon Knight. Those are guys. Like, who cares? Right?
I took a picture of Marcus Chris's mural up on the Toyota Center just yesterday. I feel like I knew it was coming.
Never forget him.
I've got to remember. Like, I was trying to figure out how much they spent on that Marcus Chris banner. Think about that. You're Marcus Chris. You got this damn banner up there, and you're doing nothing to justify it. I should have a damn banner on Toyota Center.
I'm so mad
at Leslie Alexander for not putting a banner of me up there.
I'm still not even 100% sure of how to say his name because whenever I see the spelling of it confuses the hell out of me.
It's almost like Ruth's Chris. Yeah, like you never know. You're like, I guess it's Ruth's Chris Steakhouse, but it feels weird to say it like that.
The trade deadline is today, 2 o'clock. Anthony Davis, it seems, will not be traded to the Los Angeles Lakers as the Lakers and Pelicans have had zero communication over the last 24 hours.
I don't expect him to get traded, and I don't blame the Pelicans for doing this. And I will go as far as to say this. I think this is a monumental thing when you think about where the Lakers are. Because if they don't get Anthony Davis, they are in major trouble of never winning anything with LeBron James. I know that may seem extreme, but if they don't land Anthony Davis, these guys are already very upset. They got to wait until the offseason where the Celtics will be able to join the fray and have more to offer. And it's not like you can basically play out the string and wait till 2020 to sign Anthony Davis because LeBron will be turning 35 next December.
And LeVar Ball is back in full force. Like, this is going to get uglier and uglier. And who's the hefty fella on ESPN? Windhorst. Windhorst basically came out and said, yeah, the Pelicans were just messing with the Lakers. They never intended. Remember when the Lakers said that the Lakers said the Pelicans had outrageous demands? It sounds like it's possible the Pelicans might have just been sitting in their office being like, just every time the Lakers thought they had a deal, the Pelicans were just snickering and upping the ante until the Lakers finally got a clue. This was the moment finally where the Lakers realized, oh, I'm the homecoming queen who has put on 80 pounds and been chain smoking cigarettes and nobody wants me anymore. Even though I still think I'm the homecoming queen and act like I'm the homecoming queen. Oh my gosh. Nobody wants me anymore. This was the Lakers moment. The New Orleans Pelicans were toying with you like a cat with a mouse. Oh my gosh. How far have you fallen? What legacy are you doing? Oh my gosh. You're just destroying everything. Tear it down. Move the franchise. Move to Seattle.
I have a giant, giant pants tent over this. Anyone telling LeBron James no?
Oh, you love it.
Love it. Anyone telling the Lakers no? Because honestly, the Lakers thinking that they had the leverage to pull this trade off because they're the Los Angeles Lakers is exactly why this thing unfolded as it did. Magic Johnson can't help but tamper. That's what he does best. And that we got to this point and there's just egg on everyone in that organization's face. An arrogant organization that has no reason to be arrogant ever since the Dallas Mavericks murdered them back, what was that, 7, 8 years ago in the NBA playoffs? They have been irrelevant.
Jerry Buss is rolling over in his grave. He's doing it with like three women and like smoking a big cigar and everything. But he's still rolling over his grave. He's like, I'm still having fun, everybody, but I'm kind of upset about it. And see, Jerry Buss would have pulled this off somehow. Jerry Buss would have been like partying in Vegas with the Pelicans owners and he would have figured out a way to get it done. It actually would have happened. But the Buss family needs to just completely step away. Except that's what they're trying to do too, but they did it with Magic Johnson. Sorry, Daddy. We can't run your organization nearly as well as you, so we'll just bring Magic Johnson back to screw it up for you.
It's as if, honestly, the Lakers were in an NBA 2K league. They're playing against the computer. They had turned off the realistic trade setting, and they had just been making all these trades for all of these years, and then over the last couple of years, it's like someone turned it back on, and people are actually saying no to them, and I like it, because in years past, this trade probably would have happened. Like, we've seen it happen before with like Chris Wallace and other general managers across the NBA. To wrap up headlines, Golden State Warriors star Kevin Durant, oh boy, he's mad about all the free agent rumors with him, and he got into it with a reporter.
Kevin, the free agency thing really hadn't been that much of a discussion coming to you because we got it loud and clear, at least most of us should have, that it was off limits. Don't go there.
What's the problem now?
No, just that you've been quiet and you're not usually quiet. You usually share your opinions and stuff. So everybody's like trying to figure out what's going on. And we're all getting questions from fans like, what's wrong with Kevin? I just tell him he's playing okay, but he's not talking right now.
I just don't trust none of y'all. Every time I say something, it gets twisted up and thrown out in so many different publications. Try to tear me down with my words that I say. So when I don't say nothing, it's a problem. I just want to play ball. I want to go to the gym and go home. That's all. Is that a problem? All right, then.
So you can go to the gym and go home if you're like somebody who's working in an office job and then you go to the Y and you're playing with your buddies and then you go home and nobody talks to you about what happened because you're not a professional athlete. Listen, the media and fans are going to talk about the things that are going on. And what's going on is that everybody in the NBA believes that Kevin Durant is going to the Knicks. So when the Knicks make this trade last week to clear up all this cap space for Kevin Durant and somebody else, people are going to talk about it because people don't want to be naive and they want to be discussing the things that are really going on behind the damn scenes.
I'm torn with Kevin Durant because he does have a valid point.
He does.
It, like, words do get twisted. They take a long quote and they take one little snippet, and talk radio yahoos like us will use it. And I mean, most of us, like, if we get it wrong, it's usually an innocent mistake, but some people flat out write articles and twist words because that's going to be the most dramatic thing. And the headlines are ridiculous. There's just something about the way Kevin Durant handles it that is just so insufferable. I can't quite place my finger on it. And I guess part of it is that you don't really believe Kevin Durant that he doesn't want people talking about him. Do you? Do you really get the feeling that Kevin Durant just wants to be like Kawhi Leonard? No. Cause you know who was like Kawhi Leonard? Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi Leonard just keeps to himself. He doesn't want to talk to the media. He's boring in the media. So that's what he does. But you feel like Kevin Durant really wants a lot of all the accoutrements of fame, but without actually having to have any consequences for his actions or anything like that. He still can't. He's still got a guilty conscience over what he did in going to Golden State.
He definitely does. But what has he done? And I can't stand Kevin Durant. He annoys me to a degree that I never thought I would find. One that is higher than that of LeBron James.
Wow.
And that's where I'm at. And I've been with Durant for a year. But he has not done anything. The Knicks cleared cap space. He just played a game where his team won by 40 points. Do you think that he wants to talk about the offseason right now, right around the trade deadline? I mean, maybe they're going to ask him about what it means going forward, but if they keep pressing, I can understand why he'd get ticked off when he is as sensitive as he's been over the last couple of years.
And this is the problem, though. Okay, and this is what bothers me. It's because he created this mess. It's because of everything that happened with Draymond Green. Draymond Green and he both created this mess. You look at that whole drama, and by the way, they made up over a glass of wine at a somewhere.
It took some time, though.
Yeah, it took some time, and they had to, you read the story about it, and Draymond Green accepted responsibility for when they had their little dust-up about Draymond Green referencing, Kevin Durant not committing to the team and everything. But Durant created all this and yet gets angry when people ask him questions about it. Don't deny that there's any drama there. You created all that drama. And in the NBA especially, look, that is a star-driven league to an extreme degree. And Kevin Durant, like, all the money you make, everything else, your sneaker deal, all of that comes with you being a personality out there. So just don't whine about it so much. That's all.
Coming up at the top of the hour, how big is the Texans Super Bowl window? Mike, Seth, and Paul, time now for Move Seth's Needle on a Thursday.
Whole bunch of stuff last night because we were at the Houston Sports Awards that, Paul and I, it started off, if we're talking about things that move my needle and things that bring a little tear to my eye or get me really excited or feel good about humanity, at the very beginning of the awards, Paul and I hung out with three kids from the Wheelchair Basketball League who are awesome. This is the second year they've been there. They've won all kinds of championships.
They all had like three rings.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. They've got these rings.
Giant rings. Right, they're awesome rings.
And they're like the Houston Sports. They've got all these championship rings, which is becoming the new deal now.
Rings?
And I'm blanking on the name, I'm sorry, of the designer of the rings, the guy that did the they did the Astros rings. I really apologize that I'm blanking on your name right now. But he also did the Houston Sports Award rings. He works for Red Bull now. So he goes all over the world, or Red Bull contracted him to do rings. Rings are the big championship thing now. But these three kids, we talked to them for a while, and I'd never thought of this because I've watched wheelchair basketball before, and it just dawned on me that you're playing 40 minutes of basketball, wheeling yourself around with your arms and shooting with those same arms. You think about your shot being affected by being winded, but just think about like the fact that your actual arms are exhausted.
Yeah.
And they said that your arms never stop getting exhausted. You just kind of psychologically learn to push through it. So your arms are burning and everything. Like imagine going down and doing like 20 close grip push-ups and then jumping up and shooting free throws or something.
Except for you're not jumping up. You have no leg power that goes into it. So you're also 3 feet shorter from where you would typically shoot on a basketball court.
Right. You have no leg pop into it either.
Yes.
So it's an incredible feat of a, so anyway, those guys have a big tournament at Strake Jesuit on February 23rd and 24th. I'm going to try to get out there, but if anybody else on the 23rd and 24th is out there, go watch those kids.
And I believe the people designing the rings that Seth just mentioned are from Diamond Cutters International.
Yes, Diamond
and
Cutters International.
The rings are really, really nice that they make.
So, okay.
They're impressive.
Other thing that happened last night was Wade Phillips got up to present Dan Pastorini. I got to talk to Wade Phillips for a little bit yesterday during one of the commercial breaks. And mostly I was so excited for him because of that defensive performance in the Super Bowl. I've been able to go back and watch some of the coaching tape. And he just did such a masterful job getting his guys to execute schemes that would confuse Tom Brady. And he just, they flat out confused Tom Brady because Tom Brady couldn't read coverages nearly as well as he usually did. But I still feel, I almost feel guilty. I might have to text him this morning. I felt strange, like, exuberantly congratulating him without really thinking about, oh, wait, yeah, he just lost the Super Bowl. I was that impressed with the defensive performance.
I agree.
By the fourth quarter, that defense was just gassed. And, you know, Wade's never going to say it. Nobody on that team's ever going to say it. But the offense so thoroughly let Wade down that I feel like what could have been a masterpiece defensive performance, if they just hadn't been on the field so long, was marred.
Seth, I have a question for you based on your experience. One of the issues with Wade here, even though he did a good job, is it seemed like when the Texans played the best teams, particularly the Patriots, it seemed like they got out-schemed. Was that, looking at what Wade has done in Denver and now with the Rams, is that a function of more talent, better talent, or him learning more from this experience?
I think it's, with Wade specifically, talent on the coverage side of things in your back seven, your okay. linebackers and your defensive backs. And look at, I mean, the Texans flat out, for one, they wouldn't, like, Romeo Crennel's a different type of defensive coordinator. Romeo Crennel's more of a front seven type of defensive coordinator, where Wade Phillips, you know, I mean, I don't want to pigeonhole Wade Phillips into a coverage guy, but he's able to get his guys to play coverages effectively. And I think sometimes he gets described as a guy that plays simple defenses. That's not so fair anymore because he does a really good job of disguising things. And sometimes they are simple, but he's got linebackers covering wide receivers at times and gets away with it because he disguises it so well. He's got defensive backs. One of the things they did in that game was that they'd be in man, but they'd switch up whose guys were responsible for whom frequently enough that they could fool Brady into thinking it was zone. So he could never, Brady could never really get a beat on what was going on. So Romeo's not going to do it as extravagantly as Wade Phillips, and that's not a knock on Romeo at all. It's just that Wade's one of the best defensive coordinators of all time, and you can say what you want about how they fall off after 3 or 4 years. He needs a certain type of talent to pull it off, and sometimes it's hard to maintain that talent for a few years.
I felt the same way you did about Wade. Like, you want to go up and congratulate him because it was a hell of a performance on Sunday. It was not his fault they lost the game.
The one other little thing here, AJ Foyt was inducted into the Houston Sports Hall of Fame. For those of you that don't know, one of the greatest race car drivers of all time. And the first autobiography of a sports figure I ever read was AJ Foyt's autobiography. And this was a day, I think he had written it right after he retired, but I was in like fourth grade. And there's still lessons from that book that I probably don't remember directly, but that I still think about a lot. And one of them was that he had a really bad accident once. His arm was all messed up. And instead of taking doctor's advice, he rehabbed it by painting the fence on his ranch. He just went out and started painting the fence and did that. It took him like 3 weeks or whatever. And then he went back and he started racing race cars. And I was like, one of the most excited things I was about in Houston. This is something Houstonians need to be proud of that a lot of like younger Houstonians might not even realize, how great AJ Foyt was as a race car driver, and that Foyt Racing is right here in Houston too.
Yep.
And it's a big deal. It's really cool. Everybody I've ever met from the Foyt family is just awesome. I met his daughter last night.
A random observation of mine, young Jackie Burke Jr. looks exactly like Ricky Fowler. I could not get over the big picture of him behind the stage. I was like, that is Ricky Bleeping Fowler.
Jackie Burke got up there and you get a little bit nervous because he's at an advanced age and you don't know quite how this is going to go. You're thinking like, okay, is he going to be able to give a speech? He got up there and told like 10 funny jokes in a row. It was hilarious. Like I would have listened to it for a half hour, except they had to kind of, Bill Worrell had to step in and kind of coax him away from the microphone.
He's 96.
He's
96.
I also have to give a shout out to Bill Worrell, which I have never done before, because Bill Worrell did a really good job emceeing the whole event, and he was so smooth in getting the, because Jackie went on for a really long time, and he was really smooth, like ending Jackie's speech.
You guys, you youngsters, you like to say things about certain people and local. You guys, Bill Worrell was like,
Worrell was awesome.
Sometimes there's a master of ceremonies, and sometimes there's like the master of that ceremony. Like,
he was terrific.
He is an incredible master of
ceremonies. He was really good. Yeah. He really was.
If you guys want to check out what we're talking about right now, the Houston Sports Awards, I believe they will be on TV tonight.
I think they're on ABC this evening.
ABC 13.
Check your local listings. Check your TV guide.
Indeed, check your local listings.